Hello, one and all, and welcome to episode 217 of the Voluntary Viewing Podcast, recorded today, March 12th, 2023. If we seem at all erratic, we are all on an hour less sleep than what we planned. No. And that's how we let you... No?
Nope.
No?
I got the same amount of sleep. I just woke up later.
Well, did you plan for that, or did your body know?
No, I didn't set an alarm, and I woke up at 9 o'clock instead of 8.
Okay.
I planned for it. Huh? You know me. This is my favorite holiday. When we return to the correct time, and then in 6 months, someone's going to tragically take it away for no goddamn reason.
I am not. What time is sunset set for today?
Oh, it's going to be like 7.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be amazing.
Oh, 6:58 p.m.
Yep. 7 o'clock sunsets. Are you kidding me? Yeah. Like, over the last few weeks, I've noticed more and more that, like, when I have my commute home, that, like, it's not completely pitch black when I leave the office. Yeah. All right. This is starting to look up. And then, like, I think it was literally Thursday last time I commuted. And I was like, oh, damn. It's, like, light out. And I'm commuting. And then I'm like, oh, and we're going to get even another hour. It's going to feel like midday when I leave the office. I love it.
Huh. I just realized, Ryan, you've never like worked the majority of the week in office while at your current place before. Like, that's going to be an experience for you. Like, getting back at 6 p.m. and you're like, all right, 2.5 hours of daylight to do something with now.
Yep.
Huh.
It's just so much more energizing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I literally want to go to sleep when I leave the office and it's pitch black. Like, I want to immediately probably shovel some food in my mouth and then go straight to bed. So
we were sporty Midwestern boys, and that was rough. Even as a child, I realized that was rough. Getting to school just as the sun is starting to peak up. Then having basketball or practice or something after. And then it's like, all right,
it's dark out.
30 minutes of sunlight, maybe, over open lunch, and that's it.
Yeah. It's you leave, you know, whatever it is that you're doing, and the sun is gone, and you know that you have to go home, and all you have is homework.
Yep.
It's just that's your life. As someone who, you know, was in high school in the Midwest in the winter doing sports, you wake up and it's dark. You will never see the sun until the springtime. And all you have is school, practice, homework, and depression.
There was a day of reckoning, I think, on my JV basketball team where it was like a blizzard. Like, we actually had a ton of snow that morning, but they didn't cancel school yet. It was like right on that cusp, you know, but like everything was so dark all day long. Like, it was so cloudy, and we had an early morning weightlifting session. So I entered our school, which, by the way, was designed by a prison architect and is literally just a block. Like, there's some windows to let light in, but they're all like opaque, creepy windows. You never get to actually see outside, really. Entered this block building, lifted weights. Had all my classes in windowless rooms. Lunch, like, everything was cloudy and dark. You couldn't see any sunlight. And then, had basketball practice after school. And by the time I got out of the locker room, it was fucking dark. And I realized that I'm like, is this what it's like to live in Alaska in the winter? Like, I didn't see a beam of sunlight all day long. Like, is this advanced seasonal affective disorder? I feel like I've got the most acute case possible right now. God damn.
I mean, not to say there weren't silver linings, though. You get back from that. You get back from that. You get your homework done. And then it's like, well, it's cold and dark and perilous out. My parents literally cannot give me shit for just sitting in the basement and playing Blops of Zombies with my friends online, because there is nothing else for me to do right now.
Yeah, I didn't even have homework. So I guarantee I came home and fucking launched Call of Duty Black Ops and just fucking went ham on like Ground War. So it was like 9 player teams, and all 9 people were like people from high school, and we would just fucking run servers. Like, they're really They were not designed to have 9-player teams that are coordinating with each other. Call of Duty is not a game designed for that. So we would literally just fucking hold down the entire game. We'd be like, all right, let's take B and C, let them have A, and just fucking put them in a chokehold all game long. And people would be like leaving and coming in and not knowing what they're entering, except for like we'd have a chopper gunner and dogs. So then they just immediately leave and shit. So I did have that to keep me warm.
We are 15 years old and living gods in this game.
Yeah, our reaction time is just too goddamn good.
See, I was someone who was so bad at math. I mean, I must have been like brain damaged or something, if I'm going to be honest. It took me hours to do my math homework every night. And then so it's like, all right, Andrew, you got 20 minutes maybe to play some video games with your friends. If your parents allow you tonight.
Right.
And then it's just sleep.
Hey.
We've come so far.
I learned this when I started playing video games with y'all in college. Like every one of my college friends, and everyone's like, oh, yeah, I don't know. Getting kind of beat after like an hour or two of video games. And I'm like, bruh. I on the regular would have 6+ hours of nonstop, like in the same Call of Duty lobby. Like it's just, I mean, I was completely built different from all of y'all.
No, absolutely. And I don't know if that's a genetics thing or if it's just your upbringing, because
I think that's a nurture. I've somehow evolved my body, adapted my body, didn't evolve, adapted my body to just staring at a screen for 6 hours straight and not getting a headache and not getting bored, just hanging out with the boys.
And this evolved human is Ryan Holtz, and he is about to help us rank top email sign-offs. Ryan, you are a young professional like myself and Andrew. I know you read a lot of emails. A surprising amount for 2023.
Yeah.
What are some of your favorite sign-offs, highs and lows?
I don't know if you guys have seen the Gen Z sign-offs.
No,
like, oh,
maybe
they're sometimes they pop up on TikTok, but yeah, like kill me, Gene, you know, or, you know, like just like literally the most, you know, fucking stupid.
I don't give a shit.
Yeah. No, like there's completely unprofessional sign offs. I don't know. I usually just go with thank you on any email. That's my go to. Is just thank you. Doesn't matter if I'm asking them to do something. Doesn't matter if I've been asked to do something.
Mm-hmm.
Anything. I'm a thank you. That's all it takes from me.
That's cordial. I like that.
Yeah.
I go for it.
No. You go.
I want to like best and then your name at the end of the email. Mm-hmm. Overdone. Seeing too much of it.
Worst.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like cheers is reserved for college TAs.
Yeah.
They're the only ones that can use cheers, unironically.
I
hope you enjoyed my email.
Andrew Clark.
I use sincerely most of the time. That's the default for me.
I use sincerely when I'm mad at the person.
Oh!
Like it's thank you, literally, for any other case. And also, by the way, my company doesn't end up using sign-offs a lot of the time. Email sometimes gets used almost as like a Slack, like IM style, where it's just, you just launch right into whatever you want to say. It's not like, hey, blah, 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 blah. Thanks. My name, you know, like it's very, it's just like blah, 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 and then send. So
I totally get that. Like my, where I'm at though, having been a contractor for so long, before being formally hired, I feel like I earned that sign off. I feel like I earned that sign off template. So I'm slapping that on every email.
I don't use a sign off anymore.
Really?
Yeah. No, I used to end it with sincerely and then my name. And I think now it's just so much because there's an automatic email signature on our emails. That's first name, last name, phone number, company logo. And now it's just I end the email and then it's Andrew Clark.
Huh.
Send. Like I don't know, it just got too busy, and I'm not sending it sincerely, so why would I say sincerely Andrew Clark? If I keep using that, then sincerely means nothing anymore.
Right.
If I'm a couple deep, I will drop the sign-off template and just do dash Lucas.
If you're a couple deep.
Yeah.
Is it like during work
hours?
Yeah. You know,
it's 2 in the afternoon. I think you need working.
He's not working. This is a joke.
In a video drink an game, email, bro.
I'm drunk working.
In a Minecraft game. In a match of Minecraft.
Andrew, you don't have to sign off on this one, but I would like you to sign off and tell us what you think of the NFL draft rumors so far.
The NFL draft rumors. I had a conversation with Ryan about this a couple of days ago, where I've just been so... I feel like my brain's been desaturated for like football because of all the Aaron Rodgers bullshit that I just haven't had the spark of joy that comes with all the NFL draft shit that I usually have. So I haven't been into it as much as I was before. That being said, I'm going to start this week, like really getting into this shit. I think that it's not as bad of a draft class as people have made it out to be. It does lack a lot of those like top tier blue chip players, but it's very deep at a lot of positions. And so like, I think a lot of teams are going to be okay not having as high a picks. Cause they're like, yeah, we don't need Will Anderson. We have Will Anderson at home and it's, you know, like, BJ Ojulari, in the second or third round instead of at the top of the first. I think the Panthers getting the first overall pick and the Bears trading all the way down to 9 was just kind of weird. It made sense, but it just feels weird.
Yeah, that was going to be a follow-up question for me. Like, the Bears as a team, famously bad at drafting. I think they passed on Mahomes and the other, like, pretty good quarterback.
That was the Predator.
Deshaun Watson. It actually ended up turning out okay for them. Yeah. In the scheme of things. Because, yeah.
It was just net negative or net even or slight negative instead of having Deshaun Watson.
Maybe in the recent history that worked out well for them, but that was maybe a strategic blemish. They're going galaxy brain on this one in a way that I think Bears fans are enthusiastic for.
They are.
There's more chances to fuck up. There's so many more picks now.
You know, that's the thing is that I don't feel like, oh shit, the Bears, they're going to be so good because like they have a ton of cap space and they have what they think is their quarterback of the future and they have all these draft picks. And I'm just like, okay, like they're probably just gonna pay, like really overpay for free agents. That it's not a good free agent class. Like they're gonna overpay the shit out of these guys because they just need starting caliber players, and they have all these draft picks. Some of them will turn out well because if you pick 6 times in the first 60 picks or whatever they have, like some of those guys are gonna be good. A lot of them won't be as good as they need them to be. And I don't think Justin Fields has shown as much as people think he has. Getting DJ Moore was like obviously a slam dunk for them because they need wide receivers because they had nothing.
Chase Claypool.
Yeah, they traded
the 33rd overall
pick. No, 32nd overall
pick. Oh, yeah, because the Dolphins lost their pick. So basically a first-round pick.
Basically the last pick in the Claypool. First round. Chase Claypool.
That is somehow more insulting than cash considerations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know.
I think the Bears will be a competent team. Like they're not going to be as good as people seem to hyping them up for. Like the Lions, on the other hand, Lions are poised to be good.
It was objectively the right move for the Bears to make the trade. Because, they're not going to draft a quarterback. Whether or not Justin Fields is the answer,
right.
I don't they're think not going you are in a it. Position to draft right now, first overall. So you got to go down to at least 5. And then if you're going to get something, it might as well be a haul and a player that can help you win in the near future who's not very old. He's, what, 26?
No, DJ Moore is insanely young. He's 25. He turns 26 in a month. He is 1 month older than Velus Jones, who they drafted last year.
Yeah. So DJ Moore's, he could be productive for another 6 years. Like you've got a dude who's been proven to be like a contributor. Bears might fuck it up. They've done it before.
Yeah. Like,
and DJ Moore was always kind of an underperformer. Like he was always like a solid guy, but never that like
he looked a lot better than he actually performed.
Yeah. So like they didn't fuck it up, but like I'm watching and waiting for them to fuck it up because that was the right move. Now they have to make more right moves, which I don't have any faith in them doing.
And my only additional insight into this is that I listen to a podcast. It's mostly a media focused podcast, but two of the hosts are Bears fans just in the Chicago area. They're really enthusiastic about this, and it does seem like the entire Bears fan base is just like, yo, if we have an above 500 season, that's a big old W.
I mean, like, it is they were the worst team record wise in the NFL last year.
Worse than the fucking Texans.
Yeah. Like, and the Bears performed a little bit better than that. They lost some close games, but they were still an atrocious team.
Yeah,
but they were also in the middle of a rebuild. I mean, that's kind of the beauty of the NFL offseason is that all you have is potential. The game is behind you. The idea of what the game could be is in front of you. Like, of course they're excited. They have all these picks. Like they've got their coach is going in the second year. Justin Fields looked kind of fun. Maybe not good, but fun.
I mean, look, Jalen Hurts did too. Like Jalen Hurts was fun for a year, but not like that guy. And then he took the fucking leap to be that guy. Like Justin Fields could absolutely turn out to be very good for them. Could be not great. Like
I will say, I was really high on Justin Fields when he was getting drafted. And so when the Bears drafted him, I was like, oh shit, like this could be a problem. And then he didn't really look like I thought he would, but they were also like completely tore the team apart and he had nothing supporting him. Yeah. So like, if they can do that, maybe he'll develop and that would be cool. I mean, not for me as a Packers fan.
I wouldn't be cool. Fuck that.
Yeah.
I would be so happy if he sucks too. And then they draft another guy and he sucks too. Like I could care less. I feel like Bears fans are like, haha, Packers fans can't wait for Aaron Rodgers to go. Just wait until they don't have a Hall of Fame quarterback. And I'm sitting there like,
you guys haven't had one of those.
Yeah. You know, you guys have literally never had any quarterbacks that could snip the jock strap of our last two quarterbacks that we've had for 30 fucking years. Like, I'm sorry. Like, I'll take it. Like, I feel like Jordan Love is going to be pretty darn close to Justin Fields, like in terms of production this season. It would not shock me.
If you guys remember when we had the pre-draft podcast a couple years ago, the night before the Packers drafted Jordan Love, Ryan and I got into an argument because I was really high on Jordan Love and I thought like the Saints would draft him and he would sit a year behind Drew Brees and then he would light the league up. And then we drafted him and I was really pissed off.
Yeah.
But those feelings that I had about Jordan Love, like, this guy could be really fucking good, are still there. Jordan Love could be really fucking good. He could just be okay. There's a chance he's terrible. I don't think he will be. But, like, the chances of having the third Hall of Fame caliber quarterback in a row is so minuscule that, like, I'm not going to even think about that. But it would be really cool.
Jordan Love is not Hall of Fame caliber. Like, with all the bullshit that Aaron Rodgers pulled over the last couple of years, if we had a guy who was bona fide Hall of Fame level, I think he would have been forced out earlier, regardless of the MVPs and shit. Like, I think that we're looking at a guy who's going to be competent. I think we're looking at it like an Alex Smith type, and there's nothing wrong with that. Like, Alex Smith can get you to fucking conference championships games, and with like an elite defense, especially on a rookie deal, like could literally go for it all. You never know. Like, and so I'm fine with that.
And that's a good segue into what do y'all think of how the Packers are doing in the draft and their kind of lack of big, I don't know, during the offseason so far, the conversation around the Packers has very much been, will Aaron Rodgers return again or not or whatever? And like, I've heard very little else about anything else we're trying to do to not
we're
to,
it's to the first domino
decline.
There's nothing we can do until we decide what the fuck's gonna happen to him.
We are within 24 hours of knowing, like, I mean, it
isn't the 15th, isn't that the like date where it's like a weird cutoff thing?
The legal tampering period ends tomorrow. So like that's when teams start to negotiate with free agents. It's just that they can't actually sign them or make anything official until the 15th. Monday the 13th, is when the teams kind of need to know where they are money-wise.
Yeah.
So they can start those conversations. So that's almost certainly what's going to happen. And maybe they don't announce anything. Maybe the deal's in place and they know where they're going to be and they start negotiating based on that. But we'll probably know like tonight or tomorrow morning.
Mm. Keyshawn Nixon is a fucking unrestricted free agent. And I'm like, for the love of God,
we need to get him
the
back.
Man.
Like, he was the best returner in football last year in a position where the Packers haven't had anyone even close ever to being manageable for years.
Our entire fandom, fucking what's his name, Desmond Howard, Super Bowl MVP in 96. Like that is the last time we had an actual electric kick and punt returner.
And he's pretty solid at actually just playing.
Yeah, he plays football too. He's not even just a specialist. He's not Devin Hester, where the Bears are desperately trying to like put him at wide receiver and shit. He's actually competent at playing safety. Like, he can do it.
I'm looking at this guy right now. He seems like he'd bring a great energy to the team too.
Yeah, he did.
He seems like a great guy. Yeah. And Nixon too. Like, fucking Nixon stepped up big time when Darnell Savage just got unceremoniously benched. Like, can we just please bring back Nixon and Ford? Like, please.
Yeah.
I don't know. But yeah, me and Andrew, our biggest disagreement is definitely on Anthony Richardson. Andrew thinks he's the second coming of Jesus Christ, and I think he's...
I did not say that.
He's looking like a bust, but we'll see.
I did not say Anthony Richardson looked like he was going to be the next coming of Christ. I think has the potential to be really good.
Of course he does, because he's endless potential.
You know, that's
I don't
the
think
thing.
He's going to be really good, and I feel like you do.
I feel like the crop of quarterbacks this year are, you know, you look at Bryce Young, CJ Stroud, Anthony Richardson, Will Levis. I haven't really seen anything out of Will Levis. That makes me excited. I think he looks fine. Bryce Young was like a really good college quarterback, and I think he'll be an okay NFL quarterback, which is, you know, that's deserving of the first overall pick. An okay quarterback is really hard to find. CJ Stroud, you know, probably could be better than Bryce Young, but I don't, you know, he also has like a much lower floor. They don't really get me excited. Anthony Richardson gets me excited. Yeah, he might fucking bust. So might all four of them. Like,
right.
Look at Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold, Josh Rosen. Like, those guys suck.
But what do you think will happen, Andrew? That's the question. Do you think he will be good? Because I do not. I am like, no fucking shot. This dude shot up draft boards because he ran a 4.4 40 and had an insane vertical. And it's like,
even
last
before,
I checked.
No, before the combine, I felt the same way of like, just why does anyone think that Will Levis is going to be better than Anthony Richardson?
Like, I can't say anything about Will Levis. Like, yeah, he doesn't look like anything that special either. But Anthony Richardson over like Stroud or fucking Bryce Young is like,
we've seen it though in the NFL reaching. When you have athletes at the quarterback position like that, even if they don't reach their potential as a passer,
they've got a higher floor.
Their athleticism can carry them. Like, you can still be a good team with, you know, Anthony Richardson as just a really big athletic dude behind center. Like, even if he doesn't like have the decision making and like the accuracy, which I think some of that's a little overblown. Like, he's got a fucking huge arm. I think he'll develop.
That's raw. That's all raw. There's no finesse in his game whatsoever. Like, he has proven no ability to properly read a defense to win football games. Can we talk about the fact that his only year as a starter, he had a losing record? Like, in college?
But
like,
he
come
looked
on.
Cool.
Yeah, of course he did. He's a freak. He is an athletic marvel. He is the best athlete quarterback to come out of college since Cam Newton. No doubt about it. But he doesn't look like a very good quarterback. Like Lamar Jackson, people joke about calling him a running back. Lamar Jackson was a fucking maniac in college. Lamar Jackson single-handedly carried Louisville, fucking Louisville, to national relevance. Like, and meanwhile, fucking Anthony Richardson is on a bona fide blue chip SEC program and had a losing record. And Florida fans are like, that guy's a top five pick? Like, I get
he
it.
Looks
he's
good.
Freakishly athletic. Florida fans don't think he looks good. Look at the fucking Florida subreddit, because they're all just like,
oh god,
really? Like, we watched this guy for a long time, and yeah, he's got the tools, but no,
we're gonna have to set a reminder for like 2 or 3 years from now, and just see.
We've done this. We did this
one of us will eat crow.
Yeah, we've done this with our bets. We split it. Because fucking, his name? God, Amari Rodgers did not meet the yards threshold that you thought he would. But fucking A.J. Brown, much better than Michael Pittman.
Way better than, yeah.
So
fucking all pro.
Yep. So I think that's a split.
I'm sorry. I, in good conscience, cannot encourage our listeners to check anything called the Florida subreddit or any variation of that out. That doesn't seem
the
like
Florida Gators subreddit.
Okay.
Florida the University of Florida Gators subreddit. Yeah, not Florida itself. You don't want to go to that subreddit.
Yeah. That'll anyway. Like
also, okay. Last but not least, hello. Yeah. I'm Lucas DeRuyter. My fantastic partner, Maria, she says hi, by the way, to Andrew and Ryan, not you listeners. You haven't earned that yet. She got me a scarf, and y'all can't see it, but I'm wearing it now. And this is the most bisexual I have felt in a while. And I hope I'm bringing that energy onto the podcast. Yeah.
It's because he's bisexual.
I'm setting a reminder in my phone for February 1st, 2026. In 1,057 days, and it's just going to say, is Anthony Richardson good?
then you have to say who was on what side. Andrew says,
oh, I'm
yes,
going to remember. I'm going to remember, but I'll put it. Andrew says, yes. Ryan says, absolutely not.
I mean, we have this podcast as a receipt now.
True.
That's why we do it. We also do it to talk about the news. This is... You know what? I was about to say that this is like a complete divergence from what we were just talking about. This Venn diagram is more of a circle than anyone cares to admit. Our culture is safe. We're getting a new Dragon Ball Budokai Tenkaichi game.
Wow. Those are words.
Going right back to 2008.
Is it a fighting game? What's it about?
It is an arena fighter, yes. Yes. That is just like... Here's all of Dragon Ball. Here is every Dragon Ball character in this game, even the ones nobody gives a shit about. And they also made the choice to scale these characters based on in-universe logic and not any kind of, this is how we make this a competitive
fighting
game.
Oh, not like balancing?
No.
That's hilarious.
Like, it's just actually Goku is just the only one that's worth playing as because he's so much better, but you can play as other people.
Pretty much.
So like, it's more about like you can meme on people and play with shittier fighters on purpose and like see just how much better you are than the other person based on how low you can go on the power levels and still beat them.
If you want to flex on some people, if you want to style on them, you can pick Yamcha and just beat up their Broly for 2 minutes. Yeah.
This reminds me of me and Ian teaming up freshman year in college in the FIFA World Cup edition on one of our floor mates who had a somewhat problematic obsession with Germany and used the Israeli national men's soccer team.
Yeah.
And just kicked his ass, won like 10-1. Just as a like, haha, stick it to him.
I love that. I love that so much. And I'm excited for this game to come back. The Budokai Tenkaichi games rightfully don't make it onto the top 10 of PlayStation 2 and PlayStation 3 game lists. But I don't know, in my experience growing up, like, if you didn't own a copy of this, you knew someone who had a copy. And I like that. I like that our culture is coming back. Our culture is safe. Elon Musk isn't safe, or maybe we aren't safe from Elon Musk.
Nobody's safe.
Nobody's safe. Especially not a now former Icelandic employee who Musk accused of faking muscular dystrophy and then fired him over the social media platform after he posted, he added Elon Musk kind of asking, hey, nobody knows if I have a job here or not anymore. Do I? And then, yeah, Elon Musk publicly shamed this disabled programmer who has won Iceland's Man of the Year award multiple times.
And also it's just like, what do you do? And then he explained what his job at Twitter was. And Elon Musk's response was, that doesn't sound like a real job.
Yeah. And it's like, oh, I guess that's my fault. And he even like follows up multiple times being like, I repeatedly asked my manager like throughout this whole transition as well to like, what should I be focusing my priorities on, making sure that they were aligned with like upwards management. So if you're upset with my output, there's literally no one else to blame but you. Like, yeah.
And now Musk has, in words that were definitely crafted by Musk's legal counsel, has sent an apology to this man, and then also offered to rehire him, because yeah, he was absolutely on a do not fire list, partially because employing people from parts of Europe like Iceland is weird for companies because labor laws there are very worker first in a way I as a socialist appreciate, but also in ways that make it almost impossible for a company to fire them and not lose a bunch of money.
Yeah.
And then also like his employment on Twitter was because he sold a company to them.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And part of that contract was basically like,
it pays out when he leaves.
Yeah.
That's how it works. And someone just didn't tell Elon Musk, like, hey, that guy specifically. Yeah. We're literally holding on to him in case we go under, like in case our company ceases to exist, because then he can't collect his. I've heard $100 million was right. The amount. Like, he cannot collect if we don't exist as a company anymore. So we're just kind of letting the clock go. And if we stop existing, cool. And if we still exist, then one day we'll pay it out if we're successful.
This is just... I have never... Maybe I could think of something. Maybe we could think of something if we thought long and hard enough. But I have never seen someone post through an L to this degree.
Yeah, it was pretty rough.
That's a thing that's coming up. Is that like, when did that enter the cultural lexicon? Like posting through an L. Like what? I've seen that like 4 times in the last week, and I had never seen that before in my entire life.
Oh, I've seen it a lot.
Really?
Yeah.
When did it originate?
I started getting it about a month ago, and like I posted something similar to like, hey, power's still out, but don't worry, gang. I will continue to post through it. I tweeted that.
I think that's not the same as posting through an L, I feel like.
Right. No, I've seen it in the context of, at least in the last couple of months, like posting through it. Basically, the idea is like this person is going through it. You know, we all know what that means in the lexicon, going through it. And they are on social media, basically like using it as an emotional crutch and a spilling ground during that emotional episode. And it's like, yeah, they're posting through it. Like they just broke up and they are, you know, posting a bunch of shit that they probably are going to regret later.
Mm.
I've only seen it in the context of like you fucked up on social media, and rather than just shutting your fucking mouth and letting everyone forget about it, you just keep fucking digging and digging and digging, like tweet after tweet after tweet of just like, nah, I want to make this worse. And they're like, post through it, King. Like, just like,
it really feels
making it so much worse for yourself. If you just shut the fuck up after one tweet, everything would have been so much better.
This feels like a new entryway to the alt-right pipeline. Like, how can you be so sad and bad publicly that eventually the only people in your corner maybe are white nationalists and other conservative radicals?
Everyone hates me justifiably. Some fucking sociopath, racist. Not everyone.
No. It's only that only works if you're white.
No.
Fair. Have you guys been getting Holly like suggest, like, you know how Elon publicly admitted to the fact that like
he's boosting his algorithm
so that he gets more. Have you guys been getting Holly now boosted on the, like, I feel like the algorithm somehow fucked up. I'm getting other tweets from Holly in my feed. never seen a tweet before, obviously. And like, I think I've seen like 3 or 4 tweets now in the last few days since this all happened that completely unrelated to the Elon stuff, just have been like in my feed. And it's like, I feel like the algorithm somehow fucked up because he interacted with Elon for a long time. The algorithm's like, oh, people who like Elon must like this guy and don't realize that they're doing the exact opposite of what Elon would probably want.
Yeah, I am getting that. And also a weird thing I'm noticing is that, like, now that Twitter has a following and a For You page, like, it's switching which one is the good one, you know? It's switching which one is the, where do I go to see all of the posts and retweets and, I guess, occasionally likes from, you know, the people I'm actually choosing to engage with on this platform. I feel like it's switching between the two of those.
Yeah, it's crazy how TikTok has really completely revamped all that. Like, now every social media has like a following and a, like, whatever, you know, just get fed bullshit like mode.
And I do not know who Holly is.
Oh, the employee that Elon was interacting with.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Yeah. Gotcha. I've just been getting, because his avatar is like a fucking Minecraft thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Oh, also the movie, we'll talk about it later.
Ooh. All right. Musk has rediscovered that allowing hate speech on Twitter makes it impossible to monetize it effectively. We usually don't do double dunks on this podcast, but I still find it endlessly entertaining that Musk, famous for "I'm going to disrupt this industry," has just learned every step of the way that, Twitter wasn't some kind of socialist run I cabal against him, and that all of their decisions were in fact made by people who just wanted to make money.
I had dinner last night with an old friend of mine who's now a counselor, and he told me when I meet with my new clients, you know, when we're like trying to establish what this relationship's going to be like, I tell them, you know, you can talk about religion, you should talk about all that stuff, politics, you know, gender, sexuality, like your feelings. Like it's good to talk about those things. Don't shy away from your opinions. Do not ever talk about Elon Musk. I am at my fucking limit with people talking about Elon Musk in my counseling sessions. I am begging you to just let it go. Please do not talk about Elon to me anymore.
That's got to be weird. And I do, I can kind of guess which friend, I can kind of guess what kind of counseling they do. But like, I maybe that's a little bit of a testament to the kind of person Elon Musk attracts as a fan. Yeah. Silicon Valley Bank went under on Friday. That's weird. And I don't know if anyone knows exactly what happens next.
Hey, guys, we had a good old-fashioned run on the bank.
Yeah.
Like this is straight out of Mary Poppins, baby.
Mm. Yeah.
They were over-invested. They had stuff not readily available. Someone got word of the fact that they were over-invested and tried to pull their money. And then other people got word and everyone just tried to pull their money and they didn't have it. It's kind of fucking wild that can still happen in the fucking 21st century. We can just have a literal 1930s run on the bank.
It was very weird for me to get an email from, like, not even my boss, my boss's boss at like 7 p.m. on Friday Pacific time saying, like, we can still pay you guys. Like, this isn't, we're fine. This isn't affecting us. Don't worry about it. Presumably because on behalf of our CEO was getting spammed with emails about whether or not that was happening, which understandable, but still, yeah, I don't know. The ripples of this are going to be weird and plentiful.
Yeah. I mean, I think the problem is just tech thought itself this unstoppable juggernaut for
too big to fail
way too long and is now real. Like, it's the same thing with the fucking 2008 housing market collapse. Like, everyone just kind of assumed that it was endlessly valuable. And I don't know. Obviously, nothing is infallible. The fucking Titanic syndrome with some of this stuff. It was just, nah, it's unfathomably huge. There's nothing that could ever happen to it.
Mm-hmm. And now, there are some other big banks that are now struggling. I don't know to what degree people are kind of rightfully so freaking out.
Yeah.
And, you know, people are worried that there's going to be more runs.
My understanding is that other banks have done better at it because Silicon Valley tried to fucking like slow down the withdrawals, which only made it a million times worse. Because
once like, people what realize, the fuck?
Whoa, I gotta get my money. Like, no way, yeah. No way. Like, and if they would have just like kept their cool, they maybe could have survived. Like, if they would have just been like, all right, yeah, we'll do it. Don't worry, bam. Like, everything's great. While they just like single bead of sweat staring at the total amount of cash they have available, just drain. Like, you guys ever see In Time with Justin Timberlake?
Yes, we have talked about that. Yeah, plenty. Yeah.
The fucking central thing of that movie is he's good at that arm wrestling game because, like, if you take your eye off the ball and look at the other person's time, they can fucking turn your arm. Makes no sense, but yeah, that just fucking like iron hands, like, nah, man, I'm not looking at that amount. I don't care. Keep withdrawing. It's good. Everything's great. And then eventually,
yeah, no, they shoot the guy that's watching the computer, kick him out of the chair, and sit a guy that is still invested in GameStop.
Yeah, yeah. Fucking diamond.
This man
hands.
Has diamond hands.
Yeah, he ain't dropping shit. He does not care. Like, oh yeah, they need to take out loans to continue to make withdrawals. Sometimes you got to do that.
We're Silicon Valley, baby. We'll make it back.
We're too big to fail. No one has heard of us outside of the California area.
Every single fucking person, too, is just like, this doesn't even impact the big tech companies. This is just like startups and mm-mm. blah, blah, blah. And then you look at their client list and you're like, yeah, I don't know about that. There's definitely a lot of blue chip companies in there that, like, obviously Google's not going to go under tomorrow because one bank went out of business. But, like, there's some big names in there.
I think Peter Thiel's scumbag, by the way. I have to mention that every time I bring up Peter Thiel. His venture capital company was one of their principal clients, which that's going to be weird. That's going to be weird that maybe Peter Thiel won't have money anymore.
No, they all just got bailed out like 20 minutes ago.
Oh, wait, seriously? While we've been recording?
Yeah, the customer base was just bailed out. Janet Yellen made a statement.
I mean, but wasn't the thing that like only they can only be bailed up to like X amount of money? I think
that's the thing. That's they're insured. Like all these loans are not loans. All these accounts are insured up to 250,000. So that money was safe no matter what, like because it's insured. It was the people that were worried about the money on top of that, you know, because if you put in $10 million, that other $9,750,000 isn't insured. But now the government said, we'll give that to you anyway.
Yeah.
What do you mean student loans?
Right. It's fuck the famous you. Story of Giannis where like our owner literally had to like have an intervention with him because he realized that he would deposit like $250,000 into a bank account because that's the maximum insurable amount. And then just open another bank account.
Yeah.
And deposit $250,000 into that one. And just keep
dozens
going.
Of bank accounts.
He's gotten better, apparently. But yeah, that was like, I think it was Lazary was literally like, all right, dude, we gotta teach you how to not.
This is
do
weird.
That.
Yeah.
Like, you're going to have more money than you can possibly imagine. You can't just keep opening bank accounts fucking every day at this point. So.
All right. Well, now the slow, under-discussed, and maybe won't even happen process of holding the people responsible for this accountable.
No fucking way.
Shot. It's the classic. It's capitalism for you, socialism for me. Like, oh, you don't like it? Well, maybe you should work harder, you lazy bum. And then, like, the second something goes wrong for you, like,
government,
help me. I need my money, please. And it's just like, I wouldn't even care if it wasn't such a fucking contradiction to every value you claim you hold. Like, yeah, guess what? There probably should be a social safety net provided for by the government to make sure that your whole life isn't fucking ruined by these cataclysmic events.
But we should all get it, not just you.
Yeah.
You fuck.
The planet should get it. You're the one that forever has advocated for this bullshit. Same thing with airlines during COVID.
Yeah,
just being
exactly.
Like, oh, we over-leveraged. And it's just like, what's the thing that everyone says? Like, oh, you should have saved for a rainy day. Like, literally go fuck yourself if you're going to proclaim to have these values. And then the second something turns against you, you're like, oh, better file for a bunch of PPP loans. And then they'll be forgiven. In like
and
the
then
largest
Brett Favre will take them.
Yeah. The largest act of socialism in the 21st century, where all of these giant loans were forgiven by the government, which again, not a bad thing, but the people that they were forgiven
but
for,
we should get it.
Yeah, would never ever allow that for civilians to be like, oh, you lost your job and your mom's sick. Let's provide for you and make sure that you don't fucking lose everything, huh?
God, I distinctly remember a conversation with like a scumbag libertarian back home when I was in high school who was like, and this is an adult man talking to a teenager, so this is already weird. He was like, yeah, no, Obama fucked up. He shouldn't have bailed out the auto companies. And I'm like, what are your values actually? What do you want to happen? What is the resolution you want here?
I mean, that tracks, though. Like, that's actually him being not a hypocrite. That's him being like, yeah, no, there should be no safety net. Like, us people, if we fuck up, should just fucking die on the streets. Also, big corporations, when they fuck up, should cease to exist. Like, he was actually being consistent, at least. There's that.
It's funny to find those kinds of people, though, and just see how far it will go.
Because
sometimes you can get them to slip up. Sometimes you realize that these people are animals.
Yeah, like, these people really do want Lord of the Flies. Like,
I had a similar conversation with someone like that in high school. This was another high schooler, so it wasn't such a weird dynamic. But
they
just
had
like
a completely unformed brain, basically. Like,
yeah,
they're just,
and they're...
In Maslow's development hierarchy, there's still like they don't have object permanence yet. Like they're
It was like the whole like people shouldn't get handouts. Like, well, what do you define as a handout? Like, is this okay? Is this okay? And this okay? And every time it was just like, no, it's not. And then when you reach that point, you're like, well, I got you. What about this thing? You know, what about like someone starving? Like, should they have access to like a soup kitchen? It's like, no, they should die. And then he volunteered, if my sister got attacked on the streets and was being raped, I wouldn't help her because she should be able to fend for herself. And then this was in a class, by the way. This was in a debate class, and everyone shut the fuck up.
It's like, no, that's not even libertarianism anymore.
Well,
that's
you.
Just...
You shouldn't be allowed to live.
Yeah, that's just psychopathy. You just... have no empathy. Like, no libertarians, by the way, are against soup kitchens and private charities.
Yeah.
That's their jam.
They're like people should provide the services
people
of their own
with
free
too
will.
Much should provide these services out of the goodness of their hearts. It shouldn't be forced by the government. That's their whole thing. And so he's just actually a psychopath who actually doesn't even understand what's happening.
That conversation keeps me awake to this day. And that was over 10 years ago.
How often do you stalk his social media?
I don't think I could stop myself.
Ooh.
Oh, he is off the
grid
crazy.
Up.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd be trying my best.
Last I saw, he joined the army. I don't know.
Oh, I know who this is now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fantastic. This guy fucking absolutely has committed some war crimes.
I You know, there's a non-zero chance he is involved in the Russian invasion of Ukraine, but not in a way you would
think. Yeah, no, in a very different way.
Well, they have a Russian Foreign Legion? What are you talking? What?
Well, you're talking about the Wagner Group. They're not the Foreign Legion.
I don't know. I was like, what? Well, this dude's a fucking merc for Russia.
Oh, damn. Yo, this isn't doxing anyone. At one point, he was a Russian citizen.
Oh, he's in Arizona now.
Yeah.
He was born in Russia. Like, he was adopted. Yeah.
Yeah, no, this dude got completely fucked. Like, he got brainwashed in the weirdest way and had, like, some weird crossing of that. Like, the fall of the Soviet Union combined with, like, good old American exceptionalism. And it just made a really weird person. Like,
he is an idiot worried about white culture disappearing, unlike me, a genius who's glad that Budokai Tenkaichi is bringing the good culture back.
I
will say,
fuck white culture.
If you find this guy's profile, you will not know that it's him. Oh. Like, this dude does not look anything like he did in high school.
Link it. No doxing, but we
no doxing. Not gonna say, yeah.
Damn. Well, hell yeah.
This dude is like seriously like a completely different human being. I thought I found someone else's profile with the same name.
So maybe he has like different thoughts now.
Oh, he's
riding a T-Rex with a bald eagle, and the T-Rex is holding an AR in one of his profile pictures.
Or did I legitimately find someone else's? This might be a different person.
I was about to say, this human being is wider than what I recall.
Oh yeah, like okay, I gotta fucking find. Maybe this might be a completely different person.
This is a completely different person.
Okay, here's a picture from 2014, so it'd be when you guys were in high school. Click that and see if that is him. Wait, so you don't even know, like, did he go to your high school?
No, this guy? Yeah, different guy.
This is just the wrong
This
person.
Is just a dude. I was like, man, this dude looks fucking completely different.
That's why.
Is this? Oh, okay. Now I found him.
Now you found him for reals. Now I found him. All right. Link it. Oh my God, what a profile name.
Yeah.
So not in Arizona anymore?
No. He's from where we grew up, in that general area. He's still there.
Yeah. Still big into libertarianism. Big Joe Jorgensen fan. That's But maybe he now understands the actual like meaning of everything.
Maybe, I don't
this,
know.
Like, is actually a thing, and libertarianism. American libertarianism is a fucking mess, obviously. But like at its core, libertarianism is actually like closer to anarchism than one might think. It's actually closer to real left-wing policies than you might think in practice.
He did. He posted something. That says, but the protesters were destroying property and shit, and then showing, like, you know, the Boston Tea Party. Mm-hmm. I can take a guess and say this wasn't about Black Lives Matter.
Yeah.
I think that's what other people are saying, and he did not realize that other people are comparing that.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, hey. Weird comments on the pandemic. Okay, you know what?
Yeah, he's big anti-lockdowns.
If you like, if you like masks, then you should love guns. Oh wait, don't. Yeah,
he's got a picture of Holocaust cattle cars. He's clearly making some.
Oh yeah, no, I mean
some comparisons here.
It's weird seeing someone whose entire political ideology is just based around. I mean, I would like to do whatever I want.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, is these people just say, I want to do what I want. You should still have restraints, but I want to do what I want to do. And if you don't let me do everything I want to do, you're a fucking animal. Yeah, I yell at the barista. Why do you ask?
He posted the Babylon Bee. I don't know that he understood it was satire.
The Babylon Bee is like a conservative satire.
Yeah, yeah. I know, but that's what I'm saying. Like, I think he might have unironically thought that that was a real article.
Oh, okay.
like ate the Onion. Have you ever seen that subreddit? That's funny. Yeah. Like people who
see the Onion and think it's legitimate.
Post an Onion article, not understanding what's happening right now.
I'm sorry, I have to shout out. That's actually a really clever name for that subreddit. Yeah, I love ate the onion.
Yeah,
it's pretty good.
Check out that subreddit, listeners.
Yeah.
And I, in the breakouts, am continuing to check out Fire Emblem Engage. Andrew's immediately bailed. Andrew's not even, I am disrespected.
That was it.
Yeah. Ryan, it's really hard to storm a beach. Like that concept in Warfare, like they make it look so easy in what's the Steven Spielberg movie?
Saving Private Ryan.
They make it look easy in Saving Private Ryan.
Fucking impossible. They make it look like they threw human death and suffering at it for hours until eventually they got lucky.
Yeah.
Like that was the thing about D-Day is like people don't remember the fact that it was based on a months long misinformation campaign that they had been attempting that like they were going to land at a different beach just so that they wouldn't get massacred.
Right.
Like they knew they were still going to lose tens of thousands of people on this operation. And but that was because there were less troops there, less German soldiers there than there otherwise would have been. And they would have fucking literally gotten annihilated. Like there might have not been any survivors.
Yeah, no, it is
for that.
It is nigh impossible to take a fortified port if you don't. Yeah, if you don't do what I did, and it's like, cool, I've decided in this game, I'm not going to lose anyone. So I'm just going to soft reset this a dozen times until all my anime husbandos and waifus make it through this thing okay.
You did a fucking, what's it called? The Edge of Tomorrow.
I did.
You just save scummed until you like figured out the perfect optimal path to get it going.
Yeah, and it worked finally, but a lot of trial and error there. And it's also fun seeing like real world military technology strategies implemented with fantasy aesthetics and nouns, I guess. Like, what is a dragon if not basically heavy artillery, you know? That's basically what that is.
No, it moves.
Not these dragons. They are big, chonky, and
slow.
They
just sit there?
They creeped forward a little bit.
You're talking about lizards, my guy.
They don't fly?
Worms, I guess, okay?
Yeah, big lizards.
These are fire-breathing. Do they breathe fire?
They do breathe fire.
Yeah, they just are fire-breathing, fucking lizards.
Okay, yeah.
They don't fly. I feel like that's not even a dragon.
That's fair. Not even a wyvern.
Yeah. Well, the wyverns are even more flyy.
Yeah.
They got those front arm wings.
Mm. This game also does this thing that I can't think of other games doing this, where they're introducing new mechanics via non-optional DLC, and I'm not sure how I feel about it. Like, I'm now 75% of the way through this game, and like they just now introduced the idea of weapons that can also heal you. And like, I don't know, as somebody who likes engaging with a piece of media and experiencing the authorial intent of it, it's weird for me to get most of the way through the game and it's throwing stuff at me like, and now this is a core part of it that is too good not to implement into some of your core strategies for this game.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So you have to pay for it or no?
No, this was
it's free in there. DLC.
There's more DLC, more like mechanically disruptive stuff that I could pay for. I don't want to though. But no, there's some non-optional stuff, unpaid stuff that is a forced update. And like, okay, cool. I guess This is a kind of a fundamentally different game now in some regards. Yeah. And I also worry that I think the best levels in this game are ripped from past games. They're doing, and I get like this is a curation thing. Like there are 27 levels, 27 like story boards in Fire Emblem Engage. Not all of them are going to be bangers. And through this narrative conceit, they have introduced the best levels of most of their past games and made them playable. Those ones are still really good, though. They're still the best out of all of them for the most part. And that's weird. This feels like a greatest hits album in a way that, I don't know, if I were like somebody making Fire Emblem games, I'd be a little concerned that, oh God, our best stuff is a thing from 20 years ago.
Nintendo, baby.
Yeah.
That's how it be.
Ryan, are you able to talk about Triangle of Sadness outside of saying you watched Triangle of Sadness?
I don't want to talk about it too much. I can give just a fucking taste. It's Triangle of Sadness. Real, like, worth watching.
Yeah.
I'm not going to even say that it's, like, really good or really bad. I want both of you to go in with zero expectations. It's a Swedish movie. Notch is in it. Not the real Notch, but they have inserted Notch into the narrative. And it's amazing. And I want to hear... I don't know. Just watch it. I don't want you... Don't watch trailers. Don't look into it. Just watch it and see what you think. Because me and Angel... had a great time.
That movie came out last year?
Yeah, it wouldn't count because it's for the Oscars.
Okay.
That's why I ended up watching it. My company had a screening week where every day they had a new Oscar nom.
Oh. That
you could watch. I think it was Avatar, then Triangle of Sadness, then Tar, then Everything Everywhere All at Once, and then I don't remember the last one, but yeah.
Top Gun Maverick?
No.
Oh, what?
No, I think they screened that a while ago. But yeah.
There. Andrew, normally I give you a chance, but this is a good segue. Yeah, I watched a screener of Women Talking, also nominated for an Oscar. I don't think it's going to win it. It is a really powerful movie. It is a cathartic experience of watching a bunch of women discuss, process, and begin to try to heal from a culture of sexual assaults. I don't think it is ever explicitly made clear that this is focusing on an Amish American community, but it's basically an Amish American community where, yeah, generations of the men there raping the women living there who have been so pacified under that very patriarchal culture that they don't even know how to read, which actually took my partner and I out of it for a second because it's like, when does this movie take place? It's 2010, but just the language used and the setting made it really difficult to figure that out for a bit. Yeah, and this is... this is a lot. This is a... Oh, I gotta sit down emotionally after watching this film. Probably going to win Best Adapted Screenplay. I would give it that one.
Yeah. I really hope it's Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Me too.
I feel like it's between that, I maybe Banshees, and then All Quiet on the Western Front. I think
this is probably the year that I've seen like the most Best Picture nominations that I like ever.
Well, some of them are, yeah, like out of
it. I've seen four or five of these.
Like Elvis, Avatar, Triangle of Sadness, Women Talking, no fucking shot. Top Gun Maverick, no shot. Like
no,
those are
no way.
Those five are they're just nominated for fun. Like
yeah,
there's zero chance that they win. I feel like Fablemans
and Everything Everywhere All at Once. I'd be happy with either of them winning just because I saw both of them and really enjoyed both of them. I think Banshees is definitely the more traditional Oscar baity movie.
Right.
Everything Everywhere All at Once would be really cool just because it's not what the Oscars usually go for.
Yeah.
And it was just like a really fun experience that was so different than anything else I've seen.
But then when I think about like, okay, what movie that I saw from last year is just on all levels of making cinema, is it firing? And it's Everything Everywhere All at Once. Like every dimension, like that, like every dimensions that the Oscar are curved on, judged on, that is applicable here. Like it's knocking it out of the park.
Yeah. It's overcoming the fact that it's not a traditional Oscars movie by how just good it is.
Yeah.
Which I love. But yeah, I think Fablemans was like the early favorite, and then it kind of shifted to All Quiet, and then Everything Everywhere All at Once just started like fucking sweeping awards, and they were like, wait, is it going to be that? And it's like, hell yeah, it'd be awesome.
Yeah, Maria told me this. Apparently, like, the Fablemans isn't actually Steven Spielberg's, like, send-off movie. Like, he hasn't said, all right, now I'm done.
I don't think it was ever supposed to be a send-off.
I don't know that it ever was either. Yeah, I think it was more just like,
this is me.
An ode to my life as a filmmaker.
Ode to myself.
Yeah.
So, like, that's working against it a little bit.
I've heard it's okay, but, like, when is the last genuine good Spielberg movie?
Ooh.
Like, actually, though. Like, like I'm sure that some people are going to go to bat for weird movies, and like Bridge of Spies or something. But, like, when is the last universal, no doubt about it, this is a good movie, Spielberg movie?
Okay, let's find his filmography.
Because fucking The Post. Oh, my God. I was like, wow, directed by Steven Spielberg, starring Meryl Streep and Tom Hanks. Can't go wrong. And then they did go wrong, and it wasn't good.
I know, like, some people have a soft spot for his version of West Side Story.
But yeah, soft I know spot. No shot. That doesn't count.
Yeah, people said good things, but it is a just...
No,
it's a
not Ready Player One, not The Post, not BFG, not Bridge of Spies.
Lincoln?
Ugh. Indiana Lincoln Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
I feel like Lincoln's kind of... like, yes, but like, no.
I never saw Munich. Was Munich any good? Like, people talk about
Munich,
it,
yeah.
But...
People like Adventures of Tintin too, but I like, does that count? You know,
Minority Report.
I love Catch Me If You Can.
I enjoyed that. I haven't seen it since I was a teenager, so I worry.
I have. It's good.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Catch Me If You Can holds up 100%. I mean, his last like elite movie is probably Saving Private Ryan.
Right.
Like 98 is his last, like, absolutely no fucking doubt about it. But yeah,
it's been around for a long time.
Yeah, Jaws, like... baby.
Yeah,
I mean, he was a bit of a
50 years ago.
He was a bit of like a wunderkind. Like, they brought him onto Jaws with basically no experience. Like, he was just like, yeah, why not? Give it a shot. But yeah, like, Catch Me If You Can is definitely good. Some people like The Terminal. Some people like Munich. Fucking Adventures of Tintin's definitely liked, but it's kind of not. Yeah, and then fucking War Horse, Lincoln, Bridge of Spies, those like weird historical, like, yeah, they're good, but they're not like amazing. I don't know.
Are we only going with directed, or do we count it?
Only directed.
Okay.
Yeah, because no, he's a very prolific producer as well. And
they're making another The Color Purple.
Oh.
Huh.
There's he's the producer for The Color Purple 2023.
I swear to fucking God, if Austin Butler beats Brendan Fraser, I'm gonna die. And I haven't seen either of those movies.
Brendan, I haven't either, but also Brendan Fraser deserves it. Like,
I'm so fucking sick of biopics winning Best Actor.
Yeah.
Like, I get it.
Portray this person that we have.
A person that you know. It's like, that's dumb. An original character's harder.
Yeah. Like, you're doing an impression of someone that actually exists. People do that all the time on YouTube.
Right. People will be like, oh, it's not that. Like, you can't fall in the uncanny value. It's actually its own art. And I'm like, absolutely, I agree. I think it's dumb that they dominate the awards. Like, I'm not saying that Austin Butler's job was easy. I'm just saying that I'm sick of it and I don't want him to win. Especially, and also, he looks nothing like Elvis. God damn it. It was bad casting. Sure, he did a good job, I'm sure, but does not look like fucking Elvis Presley.
The other thing about Brendan Fraser is that, and I haven't seen the movie, so take it with a grain of salt, but from what I've heard, it's that Brendan Fraser's performance is so good that it makes The Whale watchable, and The Whale is not a good movie. People are saying Brendan Fraser is the only good thing about this movie. I've heard so much shit talking about The Whale, about how the plot doesn't make sense and the other performances are not very good, but Brendan Fraser just holds everything together so well because he's that good in it.
I've heard that it's a good movie worth watching that is horrifying to watch, and that like it's not enjoyable other than Brendan Fraser's performance, like other than marveling at the pure spectacle that is his performance. So
I just know. Appreciate the gall of casting Brendan Fraser in The Whale and putting him in a fat suit after like he came back, and a big part of that conversation, some people being shitty about it, was like, oh well, he's put on a lot of weight. Yeah, no dick. It's been like 30 years since anyone saw Brendan Fraser. He is old now.
Yeah. Did you see the Woody Harrelson sketch on SNL?
No.
Which one? For the whale? It was about the whale. Like, it was a whale parody where like the movie got cut and canceled. And he didn't wear a fat suit like Woody Harrelson. Like he actually gained 400 pounds. He's like, have you ever heard of this dense caloric food? I ate eight of them every day, and then it turns out that it was canceled because The Whale came out at the same time, and he's like, what an unfortunate coincidence. And then he's like, well, you know, Brendan Fraser, he sure is getting some props even though he wore the fat suit. And he's like, but I told our studio that was not an option because he has too much artistic integrity. And he's like, well, hold on, I wish I was included in these conversations. I have super diabetes or whatever the stupid joke.
That's pretty good. I desperately have to go to the bathroom, but then I would love to talk about The Last of Us episode 8. If you guys want to start that or vamp until then, I will be back momentarily.
What do you think's going to win, Andrew? You said that this is your year where you've seen the most.
I mean, it just kind of like, in a weird way, it's the year that I've seen the most.
Right.
How
many have you seen that you think are like the competitors? Like, really, it's
just
probably
just the two. Just Everything Everywhere All at Once and Banshees of Inisherin.
Okay. You never saw All Quiet on the Western Front?
No. I didn't see All Quiet on the Western Front. I didn't see Elvis, and I don't care to. I didn't see The Fablemans. I didn't really care about it. I didn't see Tar. I thought it seemed interesting. And then, obviously, I haven't seen Triangle of Sadness.
It doesn't stand a chance. It's not going to win, but you should watch it.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because like Top Gun Maverick was like a really fun movie to watch. It's not really a best picture. Like it kind of deserved the nom just because it, you know, people kind of credit it with saving movie theaters and stuff like that. And
they want to get people to watch, like, Avatar and Top Gun. Yeah.
Yeah. Avatar is the same way. Like I had a really good time watching Avatar. It does not deserve to win best picture.
I will say though, that like, if you're going for spectacle, Top Gun is a much better executed movie than Avatar. Like I had a lot more problems with like actual like structure and execution of Avatar. Like Top Gun, for what it was near perfect.
Yeah,
like
it was just a really simple concept.
Yeah, it wasn't trying to be an elite tier movie, but for what it was trying to do, it did fucking deliver.
It was just trying to be really cool.
And it was really fucking cool. There's nothing wrong with that other than all the things that are wrong with that.
Yeah. And, you know, we've talked about the nominees, the Banshees of Inisherin and Everything Everywhere All at Once. Those are the only other two that I saw.
Okay.
And I would say, like, for both of them, if I didn't see the other one, it would be, like, so obvious to me, like, this one deserves to win. Mm-hmm. And, like, I think that if Everything Everywhere All at Once wasn't nominated, I would really be rooting for the Banshees of Inisherin because it was just, it's a really good movie. It was just, it was really, really good. But Everything Everywhere All at Once is so different and, like, also just really fucking good. Like, it's just as good. But it's not just sad people in a small town talking and being angry and like shouting and stuff. Like it's there's so much shit going on, and it's it's funny, it's wacky, it's sad, it makes you cry, it has all of the movie stuff, like it's got everything in it.
Adam Driver doesn't punch a wall and go like, sometimes I wake up, I wish you were dead. There's no obvious Oscar. Like,
there's only one movie in these nominations that have Rakakuti.
That's true. These other movies, they take a fucking hit from their lack of Rakakuni.
Yeah,
and then they you know what? Really, it's an oversight by the directors that they didn't consider the fact that their movie might be lacking a little bit of Rakakuni. I don't know. I think that I saw a TikTok of a guy doing like best actress nominations be like, and he did like a full skit of just like, you know, blah 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 for blah, blah, but it would actually be like a title and like a fake actress name, and then her just like looking at the camera like, oh, and then it cuts to like, yeah, the reel of whatever's fucking performance and all the different variables. Like one has an accent, one has like a very over the top emotionalism, one has
when you see, I love seeing like people that think that they understand film, and I'm not trying to say that I do understand film, but everyone's always like, here's what good acting is, and it's just a guy yelling. And like that can be good acting, but it's like
dumb people think good acting is.
There's other kinds of performance that can be had here.
And dumb people think chewing the scenery is good acting, but yeah, no, like that's it can be, but most of the time it's subdued. It's not breaking your immersion. When someone just starts screaming emotionally, most of the time I'm like, all right.
Unless they're playing the Joker.
He didn't really like he went over the top, but he didn't really, just like break down and just like have
Joaquin Phoenix is a good actor.
I didn't even say which Joker. Hold on.
No.
That's a perceived slight.
All Jokers. I feel like the Joker doesn't have that like, oh man, he is broken emotionally. Like he can no longer control the volume of his voice because of the pure emotional level that he's on. Like, I feel like the Joker's either completely unhinged and detached, or like very buttoned up and like put together. I don't know.
I'm just having a good time. A little goofball.
Yeah, I think that's unhinged.
Nah.
Having a good time while he tortures and murders people. He's dancing shit with a knife.
A little bit of Clockwork Orange going on here.
Yeah.
Nobody's having a good time in The Last of Us Episode 8. Nope. Except maybe Joel. He got his old man strength back.
Think he was having a good time, though. I think
I mean,
much was upset of the way things were going.
I honestly, you know what? If you are an expert at your craft, I think you derive some pleasure of it. And his craft happens to be threatening and torturing two cannibals in a way that is.
They probably weren't knowing cannibals. That's not fair.
Some of them might have been, right? But
he made it seem like he kept it pretty high and tight. Like it was maybe literally
everyone definitely suspected, but no one was willing to call it out.
No one's gonna say shit. I wouldn't say shit. You kidding me? If you're trapped in the winter in a resort with a bunch of people, and all of a sudden they start serving mystery meat. You wouldn't? Wait, would you not?
No. I'm saying the other thing is that you're trapped with cannibals.
Yeah.
Like,
no, I'd be fucking out the second that I'm able to be out. But like, there's no out. You're in the fucking middle of the Rocky Mountains in the like in a blizzard in the winter. Like, you're not going anywhere, man. You gotta survive. That's step one here.
The way they shot the food, the way they shot the production design on the meat was sensational. Yeah. Why?
The just heaping portion too that fucking that David had.
And everyone else is just like immediately gone. Like their food is gone. And David just like, I think I'll savor this.
I shall savor my meat. Yum.
Maybe it was conveying that they were starving. I don't know.
Oh, they were,
No, they were starving, but he still got huge ass portion.
Yeah, he wasn't starving, and yet he got the most food. He was the one that was, like, oh, let me tuck my napkin in and take a fork and a knife, and everyone else is just like shoveling it into their mouth as fast as they can. Yeah.
We've talked about like some of our like the flaws that we find in the show before. And I will say that Joel finally being at like 100% of the Joel that we know from the game when he's
at his weakest.
As his fucking, like he's on death's door. And like to the point where like he had to stab a guy and then hold on to the guy that he stabbed.
That was a great
moment. Wouldn't fall over. No, it was really good, but it's just like, we haven't seen the top tier Joel before, so that we know, like, oh, right. Joel being at his lowest point is this big change still, because,
but it's also still like elite. It's still a force to be reckoned with. I mean, I feel like it's the Boba Fett syndrome, right? Like Boba Fett mostly was just talked up in the Star Wars movies about how badass he was. And like, we never really got to see it. That's kind of Joel. Like the first few episodes, it's kind of talked about how elite he is and how everyone, like this dude who has goons, is terrified of him. And like the only other person you see who's kind of competently handling the apocalypse respects him. And it's a soft power, but now we've seen it.
The conscious decision Joel makes after stabbing a man to death to leave the knife in and instead, well, I'm going to beat this guy to death now instead of just stabbing him.
He's mad. He's big mad.
They took his little girl.
Yeah. Joel's big mad.
He doesn't care about these people. They don't deserve his sympathy.
To be fair, they did try to kill her. They didn't want to take her.
And they also were going to kill Joel. Like,
I get it. They are in a cult. None of these people are doing well. None of them are shot. And Troy Baker is not having a great time in this casting.
He's a skinny motherfucker. He pulled it off. I bought that Troy Baker hasn't eaten in a while.
But like, wait, hold on. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, boss. I'm sorry, father. We got a chance to just like ice the people who have wronged us. And you're like, yo, let's bring the girl in. I don't know. I'm having some questions there. I'm like,
he's like, we are starving. You want to bring another person that eats food into our group? And that person killed our friend? Like,
she didn't. She didn't. Well, no,
but they don't know that. Like,
they don't not know it.
Like, she's part of it. Like, they definitely treated her like she was just as guilty, which that's on them.
Like, yeah, I think that it was more on them. Like, the three people came back. Like, only one guy died in the Eastern Colorado University or whatever the fuck. Like, they would have told the story. Like, they would have talked about the fact that also this little girl was like a psychopath and like helped him murder this guy. Like, I think they knew that she was somewhat innocent, but she was guilty by association. And they didn't want to have another mouth to feed. And also, I listened to the podcast and
I did too.
Yeah. And Craig Mazin did not indicate this, but I feel like I had a little bit of vibes of like, they kind of wanted to also prevent what they kind of suspected was about to happen to her from happening to her too. Like a little bit of mercy in there, maybe. Like definitely revenge, but also like what David's about to do to her might be worse than us just killing her right now. Like,
That was a bad time to watch a child be groomed in a television show, or the attempt being made.
It's interesting that you say that, because I didn't really think of it from that angle. I perceived it more of like the angle that Troy Baker had in the podcast of like, Troy Baker's this guy's right-hand man.
Yeah, that too.
And David definitely wants this woman because... Or this little girl.
Yeah, this little girl.
because he sees her as an equal, and that means that James is on the out. Yeah. Like, and he doesn't want that shit. Like, this is a cult that feeds off of dependence and favoritism from this guy.
I don't know. I think it was somewhat known what David was doing, like, clearly. And I that was just on my first watch. Like I had those vibes, and I don't think that the creators get to dictate character motivations necessarily if they're not explicitly stated. And so that was one, like just one, obviously. Yeah, it's a potpourri of a million things, but I thought that was part of it too, is like being tacitly aware of another reason that David might want her around. So, but I mean, straight from the game.
Yeah.
Some adjustments. They didn't have nearly as many infected. I feel like they really only bonded over a conversation in the game.
Yeah.
They bonded over the fact that they literally save each other's lives.
There's been a lot of moments in this show where they're like, well, we got rid of the infected because of, you know, this thing. And then we got rid of the infected because of this thing. And then we got rid of the infected because of this thing. And those choices all make sense. But it's like, man, we've seen very little of the whole reason why this world exists.
They've only been in mortal danger from a from a fucking infected, what, three times?
Mm-hmm.
Like yeah. in the mall, fucking in St. Louis, and in with the fucking clickers in the museum.
Yeah.
Isn't that the only was real it? Time? Like, I don't know. It's interesting. A zombie show.
And it, you know, and in the mall, many. Like, that was one infected. That was yeah. one guy.
But that's canon. Oh, no, that's right. They changed it. There was originally a lot of infected.
Yeah, they, right like now. They were, like, outrunning a horde.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that. They did change that, too. That's a minor change that I necessarily mind. I think it works.
No, it was fine. It's just that yeah. there's been very little. And I'm not trying to say, like, this show's bad because I want more zombies to shoot.
Right.
Like, it's just... this is the world that they've built, and it's super interesting. Right. And a lot of it is just kind of only talked about.
That's... Craig Mazin wants to ground it, I think, a lot more. When you listen to the podcast, a lot of his motivations are, this thing doesn't work on TV as well as it might in a video game. Like, yeah, just having these zombies be zombies, you know, like zombies, historically, it's like the way they get you is numbers and they overwhelm you. They're not individual threats. And I feel like Craig Mazin wanted that to be a little more realistic and a little mm-hmm. more like, no, these one zombie can kill you even if you got a gun, like it can get to you. So
that was a really good Twitter thread of, hey, people want more zombies in The Last of Us, I got a recommendation for you, Resident Evil. Every game, wall-to-wall zombies, always about zombies, every kind of zombie. We even got mold zombies in there. Latest game where a tall vampire lady takes center stage, guess what? You're a zombie. All the time. Yeah. Wall-to-wall.
Yeah. No. I think they also, yeah, associations with Walking Dead or something like that. They're just like,
yeah.
Maybe not.
Do we know if the final episode is going to be like feature length or something like that? Because I don't know. It feels like we got a lot of emotional stuff to do before the season ends, and we only got one episode for that.
One of my coworkers got a cut, and she didn't watch it, but I think she said it was 43 minutes. So
I think it's
just a normal length episode. So,
all right.
Yeah. I don't know. We'll be prepared.
Endure we will be prepared. We will survive. Until
endure
the next
and
episode.
Survive.
Until the next episode of the Voluntary Viewing Podcast. Thank you so much for checking out episode 217, which will almost certainly be titled Florida Subreddit. If you like what you heard, like, comment, subscribe, etc. Check us out on Instagram, YouTube, and TikTok for highlight clips. ActBlue link in the description. Support us either on the Anchor Podcast platform or Patreon, where you can join the likes of the terrific Tiffany Cole, Sucky Badger, and Sensual Richard Nixon. I am still Lucas DeRuyter, at Lucas DeRuyter on Twitter for as long as that thing stays around. Follow me there for all of my writing and other projects. Just did a very... interesting, illuminating live stream on VTubers with the leadership on the VTuber wiki. Check that out on Fandom's Twitch channel. But again, thank you all so much for listening. Have a great week, and I don't know, whatever kind of Oscar watch along bingo thing you're doing, I hope you're successful in it. Goodbye.